This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Let's talk about that election last night. I'm going to tell you my thoughts on it. Cernovich is here to break it down for us. What do we have to worry about if Democrats take power again and Supreme Court stuff? All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, we had an election last night. Elections last night. All across the United States of America, you are obviously well aware of this. We had them in New York, we had them in Jersey, we had them in Virginia, we had them in South Carolina, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Texas, California, on and on and on it goes. And we'll get to what happened last night in a moment. We'll talk about New York City and other things, but I wanted to explain something and get ready because you, me, we're going to have this conversation probably after every single election in the country. It's important to understand some things. So first, let's cover this part of it. In life, in all walks of life, there are some things you can control, and there are some things that you can't. They're bigger than you, bigger than me. We don't have the power to control them. So before we get into the other parts of elections, let's discuss this part. The party that is out of power nationally traditionally does really, really, really well in off-year local state elections. And it's very understandable why. When we were, look, not long ago, we were in Biden's presidency. The midterm elections and local elections and state elections and those things like that. How motivated were you to get out to the polls? Did you need somebody to poke you in the ribs and say, hey, get off the couch, get out to the polls? No. You were very angry about the direction of the country, the open border, everything else. So even if there was an election for dog catcher in your area, something that didn't have anything to do with Joe Biden, you were still there at the polls. You had an extra motivation the people in power didn't have. Traditionally, it's just human nature. The people who are out of power do better in these elections. And while we can try to fight against that, we can try to mitigate this or that, and believe me, I'm going to get to more. Look, it's not all sunny, right? I'm not trying to make you feel better, but I'm just explaining. It's New Jersey. It's New York City. It's California. It's Virginia. These are not blood red areas. We were already swimming against the tide. Didn't go our way. It sucked. It was a bad night. I'm not saying otherwise. It sucked, but come on. Did you wake up today and you were stunned that New York City elected a communist, which we'll get to in a moment? Okay, so that I wanted to get that out of the way. There are big national 30,000-foot view things that you're powerless to stop, the motivation thing. Now let's talk about other parts of elections. First, you and I, we want to believe something. We will always be this way. We want to believe that the people we share a country with, the people on the sidewalk outside right now, the people driving next to us, the people in our children's school, in our work, but we want to believe that they share our value system. At least some of it. Maybe we're not going to align exactly. You and I don't align exactly, but they share some of it, right? But that's not the history of the world, and that's not how it works. When you look at things like the election in New York City, but this is pretty consistent across the board, you know who picked the communists? Overwhelmingly. You know who picked the communists? Foreigners and young single women. Over and over and over again, young, miserable, mentally ill, liberal women in this country collaborated with hostile foreigners to burn your country to the ground. If you look at the breakdown of the exit polls of all these races, when you look at normal people, married couples, men, people born in America, they didn't vote for Mamdani in New York City. They didn't want Spamberger in Virginia. Okay, so what does that mean? It means that you and I have a lot to overcome. We have to overcome young, single, miserable women and foreigners. The young single women part we can get to another time, but you realize that half that coalition can be taken care of. Deport them. Stop allowing mass immigration into the United States of America, legal or illegal. And the ones who are here, deport them. Send them back home. Do you have any idea how many problems, including electoral problems, disappear like that if we send foreigners back home? Disloyal foreigners whose loyalty can be bought with a welfare check, with a CDL. Just deport them. Okay, so there's that aspect of it. We have hostile interests, some foreign, some domestic, inside of the country who don't share your values, they don't share my values, and we will always have to overcome that until we solve those problems. So that's a big thing. Another big thing to keep in mind with elections. I've learned this after being, probably 20 years now I've been involved in politics. 20 years. Every race has its own story. What we want as human beings, I'm the exact same way, what we want is a simple, give me the bumper sticker. Give me the simple headline, why did we lose? And you want it to be one sentence. We lost all these races because of blank. It's because of Trump or tariffs or ICE. We want simple. But each and every race, Virginia, New Jersey, New York City, everywhere, each and every race had its own candidate, its own campaign, its own story to tell. For instance, in Virginia, I personally, as I told you before, I like Winsome Earl Sears. I find her personally very appealing. I think she's talented. But they didn't have a primary. She didn't do well raising money. Therefore, she didn't do well getting out the vote. The money, the organization was not there. Abigail Spanberger raised a bunch of money. Her people were out in the streets. And so these are nitty-gritty things. Unless you're in Virginia, you don't know these things. You look and you say, Virginia's communist. Maybe we caught lightning in a bottle last time. Maybe we didn't run quite the race we were supposed to run this time. What's the opposite of that? You want some good news? I live in Texas. Now, if you don't live in Texas, maybe this isn't good news to you, but it'll show you trends. In Texas, there were, I believe, 17 constitutional amendments that the people got to vote on. We got to vote on them here. I disagreed with a few, but for the most part, they were absolutely wonderful. We're talking about certifying parents' rights and getting rid of the death tax and forcing these commie judges to keep criminals in jail. I mean, a lot of things you like. They all passed. 60, 70% approval. Beyond that, in my local community, here's another aspect of elections we don't think about. In my local community, they were trying to increase taxes for various things, that four or five things. They were trying to increase taxes. But you know what the language read on the ballot? Big, bold letters. This is a tax increase. And then it explained what it was. Sounds simple, sounds small. The language on the ballot matters. All those things were shot down. You see, every race, every candidate, every campaign has its own story to tell. And you're supposed to come up here. I'm supposed to show up on television this time of night. And I'm supposed to tell you, all is lost, all is won. We lost because of A. We didn't lose because of B. But things are complicated. Now, beyond all that, let's just touch on this aspect of it, as long as I brought up the young women and foreigners. Did you catch any of Ma'am Donnie's victory speech last night?
New York, tonight you have delivered a mandate for change. A mandate for a new kind of politics. We will prove that there is no problem too large for government to solve and no concern too small for it to care about. I speak of Yemeni bodega owners and Mexican abuelas, Senegalese taxi drivers and Uzbek nurses, Trinidadian line cooks and Ethiopian aunties. I am young, despite my best efforts to grow older. I am Muslim. I am a democratic socialist. And most damning of all, I refuse to apologize for any of this.
It's not a message for you. And, you know, to his credit, he didn't even attempt to talk to you or about you. He didn't mention America or Americans. He didn't mention your race, your religion, because that's not who gave him power. Young, miserable American women on anti-anxiety medication combined with the foreign hordes flooded into New York City, and they put him in the mayor's house. American-born New Yorkers did not vote for Mamdani. They overwhelmingly rejected Mamdani. You know who knows that? Mamdani. My point in bringing this up is, this is my central point. A couple things. I actually want to wrap this up because we have so much we want to get to tonight. A couple things to remember. I told you this after we won in November. You've heard me say something similar to this several times before. We have before us, in the interest of saving the country, we have before us not one race, not one year, not one battle, 10,000 of them. For the rest of your life, there will be elections, critically important elections, local, state, federal, 10,000 battles still to fight. And I am going to make you a promise right now. We are going to win some of those battles. And we're going to lose some of those battles. And on the night we win, like last November, we can be happy and should be happy. We should not ever stand up and say, finally, the devil has been defeated. All is well. We're good to go. I'm going to go sit on the couch. Doesn't work that way. And on nights like last night, wiped out in Virginia, Pennsylvania, Georgia, New Jersey, California, wiped out. We should not wake up today while we can be sad. We can be mad. We should not wake up today and say, all is lost. The world is coming to an end. Doesn't work that way either. 10,000 battles. Some we will win. Some we will lose. And look, if you watch I'm Right, you kind of knew about things like Virginia already. Sean Spicer told us yesterday.
I like Winsome personally. I did an event with her a couple weeks ago. She has not run the greatest campaign. She has not raised the money that she needs to. She has not put the operation together that she needs to. Her team, I think, in a lot of cases has let her down. But she's been vastly outspent. I've talked to a lot of perennial Virginia donors who say they were never even contacted. I don't think this has been the best effort put forward.
The final lesson is just watch this show and you'll be better prepared to handle the wins and the W's. Now, Mike Cernovich does have some hard things to say to the GOP, probably very valid things. He's pretty down on last night, and we're going to talk to Mike about all this in just a moment. Before we talk to Mike, you know what we need for 10,000 battles? Energy. Focus. You have to feel good. How could I be sitting here after a bad night, still have a little smirk on my face, ready to go? Couldn't wait to come to work today because I take a male vitality stack from Chalk every day. I have natural herbal supplements in my life that make my mind work well. My body feels good. I'm just better at home, at work. They have male vitality stacks and female vitality stacks. You want to start your day off with all the vitamins and minerals. They have Chalk Lit Powder. Go find out what Chalk can do for you, how much better your life is going to be. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
It was, not expected to be a victory. It was very Democrat areas, but I don't think it was good for Republicans. I don't think it was good. I'm not sure it was good for anybody. But we had an interesting evening, and we learned a lot.
Interesting. Certainly wasn't good. I just reemphasize what I said in the open, that it was bad. We've had bad nights before. I'm not sure that it spells doom. Mike Cernovich, my friend Mike Cernovich, is joining us right now, thinks that we are in some trouble if some things don't change, and I think he deserves the floor. Mike, the floor is yours.
Well, I felt that way the minute Trump won. I posted November 11, 2024, somebody could find that tweet, that we need to worry about the midterm. So here's the thing that everybody, all the, not you, but the consultant class misses. They go, well, Trump drives Democrat turnout when he's on the ballot, but sure, but he drives Republican turnout. So if you look at 2016, Trump won, GOP has a trifecta. 2018, Trump's off ballot, blue wave. 2020, Republicans, remember in 2020, Republicans were supposed to lose the Senate and the House, right? That was the prediction. No, the only person who lost in 2020 was Trump, right? Which is why a lot of people, myself included, even if you didn't buy the really kooky theories about the stolen election, you did say, well, how is it that the Senate stayed Republican, but somehow Trump lost? Okay. Special elections, Trump's not on ballot. Georgia loses two Senate seats. 2022, what happens? 2024, what happens? So what, the GOP does not exist. It is the Trump party. It is Trump's GOP. So even if last night hadn't happened, I was already worried about the midterms. I was worried about the midterms the week Trump won. I was like, I'm always like the Cassandra. I tried to be like a Debbie Downer because people who know me know that I'm a pretty upbeat guy. But what's our plan to win in 2026 with Trump off the ballot? And then, of course, last night was a bad night.
Okay, Mike, so what is it about the GOP voter that is uniquely motivated to vote for Trump, to your point, but when Donald Trump's name is not on there, he's just not interested? He cares about these issues when Trump is on the ballot, but doesn't when he's not? Help me understand.
Sure. I was getting coffee and I was sort of thinking what we talk about. And I was going to ask you the question. If your job weren't politics and media, would you vote in the 2026 midterms?
I would, but I vote in every single election because I think it matters. I think it's extremely important. Of course I would.
But you had a pause. You're just like, it's not like, well, of course I would. Why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I be hyped, right? Trump voters are hyped to vote. If I said a week before 2024, you're going to vote, you're like, what kind of stupid, idiotic question? Of course, obviously I'm going to vote, right? Obviously, in 2026, it's like, well, intellectually, I know that it's important and there are real problems if I don't vote. And you run it through your head, but you don't feel it, right? You don't feel it in your heart. And that's everybody, if we're just being honest. It's like, if you were honest, not you, but I'm just saying like the collective, the royal we, right? If we're all being honest, we would say, I mean, yeah, I get it. You got to vote Republican because look at what Schumer did. But people who don't live in politics and media don't go vote because of that, right? They don't go vote because of that. They need to feel a calling. They need to feel an energy and a momentum to go out and vote. And that doesn't happen with Trump not on the ballot. So then to be positive, how can Republicans draw up more voters? Well, they could do Republican things like I'm seeing right now, Ted Cruz, who, by the way, I'm 90% pro Ted Cruz. When Ted Cruz had a close race with Beto, obviously I was like, this is crazy. You have to vote for Ted Cruz and everything. But I'm against this trend of people in the Senate being podcasters and influencers, right? You're in the Senate. I can post about things. Jesse Kelly, we can be on Twitter all day. You know, and I know that they have to do some kind of media, so I'm not saying some media, but do things in the Senate that make people want to vote. What's Mike Johnson really doing? They always have an excuse. Oh, we need 60 votes. We can't do anything. But in 2024, they were going to have 60 votes for amnesty because you couldn't close the border without, remember that? This is why I'm tired of being gaslit by Mike Johnson and Ted Cruz and everybody. In 2024, Lindsey Graham and Lankford and Thune, whatever his name is, they all said we can't shut the border unless we can do amnesty. It's the only way to do it. But we better come out in 2026 because Because why? Because why? Right?
Okay, so let's talk domestically, Mike, because you've been making this point, and I'll be honest with you, I'm looking at a stack of I don't know how many emails, and there are a lot of these emails from people who make the point that you have been ranting about online about a domestic focus from Trump and the GOP. That people, they're even fine with, you know, go drop some bombs on Iran. Sounds fine. Whatever. But they don't care about that deeply. They care that they can't afford to go see their mother on vacation. They can't afford groceries. They can't afford a pound of burger. And they don't see a lot of movement on those things.
No, they don't. They don't see none. I'm having people texting me like chuck roast is expensive now, which goes to show what people are thinking about economically. They're not focused on the foreign stuff. The foreign stuff. The deal that was struck in 2024 that should have been struck was, hey, look, people like me, I don't care about Israel. I don't really care. My opinion on Israel would probably get me canceled because it's pretty. It's not anti-Israel. It's probably so pro-Israel that it would make me look like a ghoul, you know? But you got to carry your own weight. You know, Israel's got to wrap this stuff up. They got to wrap it up. I'm not here scolding you or doing the moralizing. This is what war looked like. We've just never had a live stream. But you can't do propaganda for the other side every day. You can't give them more video footage every day. You got to wrap it up. And then we got to go domestic. That was the deal, stated and unstated. And yet here we are a year after Trump's election, and if you asked the average man on the street, not the DC policy wonk, if you ask the average man on the street what has Trump's priority been over the last year, they're going to say, well, Ukraine, Israel, the Nobel Peace Prize. That's what they're going to say. And it sounds like that's what your audience is saying too, a lot of your audience.
It is. I hear a lot of it, Mike, and this is what has concerned me with the Venezuela stuff. The normal person, I'm not talking about the normal commie who Trump's the devil, all that stuff. I'm talking about normal people, the people that I talk to in my life because I don't hang around with political people. When they brought up Venezuela, I mean, everyone likes a little video on their phone of a drug boat getting incinerated. No one's crying for those dirt balls. But I got asked a lot, Mike, why? What? Why are we down there? Why are we messing with it? It's not that it's not a righteous cause. I got a lot of, well, why do I care? There's a lot of that.
Especially when we know that fentanyl is not coming primarily from Venezuela, right? It's another instance where, yeah, I'm the same way. I think we shouldn't have gone to the Middle East. I think that we should have taken over most of Latin America and Southern America and run it as part of the Roman Empire. That's my view. But now people have no appetite for regime change war. Another side quest, another foreign policy. Okay, we got Ukraine, we have Israel. Okay, fine, can we do domestic issues? No, we're going to do regime change war. Now, I know that there's going to be a lot of people, myself included, who could counteract my argument by listing everything done. And my answer to that is I understand that. I'm not saying this is my personal belief. I'm telling you that what we know is not what the average person and the voters who come out for Trump, they're not experiencing the same thing because they don't have all day to monitor this stuff, right? You got to look at, people are busy. People got stuff going on. Times are tough. A lot of people are working two jobs. What information is getting filtered down to them? And it's almost nothing. Even though me, I could list off, I could make the case for why Trump is the best president of my lifetime. I could do that standing on my head while also thinking we're going to lose the midterms unless we turn this around.
Can we turn it around by the midterms, Mike? Can we make the necessary adjustments and get the things done to get it done? Or is this, you know, fighting the ocean? Is it inevitable?
It's not inevitable. We got a year of Mondami. So we got Mondami for a year. We got a lot of things that can go bad for the Democrats over the next year, right? A lot can happen in a year. How's the quote go? Nothing happens in a year, and then years happen in a decade, or decades happen in a year. Something like that could happen, but the Venezuela thing could go sideways. The problem with Venezuela, even though I'm again, I'm not opposed to regime change wars. I have a very Roman mindset about a lot of this stuff. I just think that if we're going to go over there, you have to run it like a colony. You have to colonize it, which is why people forget. We won. People say, oh, we lost the war in Afghanistan. It's like the military didn't lose. It was an occupation because people are afraid to be colonizers. So I'm not some anti-colony woke guy. But a lot can go wrong in the Venezuela thing. And what can go right? We already got the oil deal that we need. So what exactly is the win versus American troops could die? Well, then we're going to have to retaliate. Are we going to be in a hot war with Venezuela? What in the world, right? What's our upside here? That's kind of what people are seeing. And if Trump doesn't come home, so to speak, then we are looking at a Democrat midterm win, and we are looking at more impeachment, and we are looking at a repeat of the hell of the Adam Schiff era.
Oh, gosh. Mike, as always, thank you, brother. I appreciate you. All right. If Democrats do come back to power, what are we in store for? What should we be thinking about? What is our motivation to get out there and dig in for the midterms? Talk about that briefly in a moment. Before we talk about that, maybe last night you had trouble sleeping. Maybe you stayed up all night, rage looking at your phone, getting mad about the elections. I get it. I've done it. That's why you need Beam in your life. That's why you need Dream Powder from Beam in your life. Doesn't it sound lovely? It is, because it's hot chocolate. I'm a hot chocolate guy. I always have been. Get me around a campfire, cup of hot chocolate, I'm a happy man. I now have hot chocolate in my possession that makes me sleep like a little bitty baby. Not with drugs. A bunch of natural stuff in this Dream Powder puts you to sleep. When you wake up, you're not all groggy with one eye half open. You feel dead. You feel great because it's natural stuff. You want to try it? Try one bag. shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Okay, so that was a lot. I told you it's not the end of the world. What happened last night, and it's not. Mike Cernovich just came on here and told you that we should be concerned about the midterms. And you know what? He's right, too. We should be. So maybe you're sitting there thinking, oh boy, what do I do? Well, allow me to give you just a little bit of motivation. Just going to spend a few minutes, give you a little bit of motivation. You know how terrible, you remember, of course, how terrible it was under the Biden administration. I'm not just talking about policies. How truly evil the government became. These people just turned all the guns of the government and aimed them at you. Aimed them at me, aimed them at Trump. Just deployed the government against their political opponents. Truly, truly evil. But I want to remind you of this. These people aren't sorry. To this day, and I have asked for this several times. I have asked for emails. I've asked friends. To this day, I have not heard of a single Democrat in the United States of America, not just people on TV, a single Democrat that has expressed that maybe arresting Trump with a bunch of bogus felony charges was wrong. Not one has come out and said, that was probably the wrong thing to do. They're not sorry. This was James Comey on MSNBC.
I know Republicans these days aren't big in thinking about principle or precedent. They're going to be deeply sorry that that disappears, because someday there will be a Democratic president and there'll be investigations of Republican office holders. If I'm them, I sure would want these career people in place, making sure that it's done in the right way. Look, I've long thought that you could shrink the size of some of the Department of Justice headquarters units, but this is like burning down the house and then standing in front of the pile of ashes and saying, yeah, we really did need to retile the guest bath, right? This is destroying the place at a cost that's going to take years and years to rebuild.
They're coming back harder if we give them power again. Eric Holder, he's out there on the podcast circuit. Here's what he said.
It pains me to say this. I think the Supreme Court is a broken institution. And it's something that has to be, I think, a part of the national conversation in 26 and in 28. What are we going to do about the Supreme Court? And I think that we have to think about, again, talking about the acquisition and the use of power. If there is a Democratic trifecta in 2028, and I think the possibility of that is pretty good, Supreme Court reform is something that has to be considered. Term limits, I think, at a minimum, potentially expanding the court is something I think that also should be considered.
What we saw under the Biden administration was the warm-up act. Maybe you're recalling 4 years of evil and you're saying to yourself, "Woo! Can't believe we lived through that. Thank goodness that's over. We never have to deal with it again." No, 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 no. The only lesson the communists learned from last time is he didn't hit you hard enough. The only lesson these people learned is they didn't do enough evil things. They didn't shred the Constitution enough. They didn't jail enough of their political opponents. That's the only thing they learned. Last night, we took it on the chin. I got that. Sucked. The midterm elections. Maybe they'll go our way. Maybe they won't. But we have, starting right now, we have time to begin fighting back. You, personally. Me. Personally, are we going to get involved? Are we going to knock on doors? Are we going to phone bank for candidates? If we have money, are we going to donate to candidates and causes? Are we going to do the blocking and tackling necessary to ensure we're not wiped out at the midterms? That decision gets made now. I know everybody's licking their wounds today. I got it. Let's decide now that we're not going to let these people ever back in power again. All right? All right. When you make that decision, I want you to reward yourself with some massive chips. Look, you deserve it. You deserve a massive chips reward. "But Jesse, I don't want to be unhealthy. I like chips too much, but they're bad for you." No, 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 no. I didn't say any chips. I said massive chips. I know you've already heard of them. Maybe you have friends who've already eaten a bag. They're freaking amazing. And you can eat them guilt-free. I am such a massive chips fan because I'm a chips freak. And all the health chips I've ever tried in my life have been garbage. Massive chips, three ingredients. Multiple flavors. Got blue ones, habanero. They got more than I can list for you here. Get yourself a bag of massive chips, a little bottle of hot sauce. Massachips.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. All right, I hate to step away from everybody getting the vapors about the election last night, but there are some fairly important things happening at the Supreme Court today. And as you are well aware, I'm too dumb to tell you about any of these. That's why we need Alex in here. Joining me now, Alex Sawyer, author of the book Lawless Lawfare, also with the Washington Times. Okay, Alex, before we get to what you heard, what you saw today, what even is this tariff case?
Okay, good. We need to set this up. All right. So what the tariff case is basically is some small businesses, toy makers, a wine distributor. I like wine. Gotta give them a shout out. They have challenged President Trump's tariffs that he has imposed on various countries. They say that the power to lay tariffs and impose those belongs to Congress because Congress is the one that has the ability to lay and collect taxes. And they're basically saying that tariffs are a tax. The president, though, and his administration has cited federal law, basically arguing that he has the power to, in emergency situations, impose tariffs on foreign countries when he sees fit. He is basically two reasons he has given for this national emergency. One is the flow of fentanyl. He says that he needs to lay tariffs on some countries that are pouring fentanyl into our country. And then the other aspect is the trade deficit, that's a problem, of course, that he's trying to make up. The law he cites is the International National Emergency Economic Powers Act. And within that law, it basically does say the president has the ability to regulate imports. The question is, does that include issuing tariffs? And that's what the Supreme Court is going to decide.
Okay, Alex, before we get to what happened today, I'm going to ask you a couple really, really dumb questions, but I need to understand this. Trump says it's an emergency. I got that. Are there rules? Surely there are rules around what constitutes an emergency, right? I can't come home and tell my wife we have to go to Red Lobster because it's an emergency. She's going to ask for an explanation. What's the emergency?
Yeah, so that is one aspect that's being explored in court. And there's precedent basically about what would constitute an emergency or not. When can the court second guess the executive on what is an emergency? That was something they kind of dove into. And you would think there would be clear bright line rules, Jesse, like you're asking about, but there really isn't. That prompted actually Justice Sonia Sotomayor to ask, well, what about climate change? Could President Biden have said, climate change is a national emergency. I'm going to use this same law and start, you know, use it, she said, to, for example, to forgive student loan debt. I'm not sure why that is connected to climate change, but that's what she chose. And then it was just kind of interesting because even Justice Gorsuch, you know, obviously not on the Democratic wing of the court, but he jumped on that same narrative about, well, if the government were to win here, would climate change be a national emergency or an emergency that the president could cite in imposing tariffs on other countries? Would that now be next? I think that the question that you're asking is very pointed, and hopefully the court will give a little bit of guidance on that. But it doesn't seem like there's a bright line rule about what would be an emergency and what isn't.
Oh, that's freaking wonderful. Okay, now let's go to what happened today. I know you even made for us a cheat sheet of some kind. The floor is yours.
I'm going to give you a little sneak peek. So whenever I go in the court, you cannot have electronics. So you're in there without your computer, your handwriting notes. These are all my little notes I brought for you on my little legal pad. It's pink. But I like to keep track of where the justices might fall. So you can see I kind of like have their names kind of listed. So I left, you guys, really thinking that the administration had a harder day in court. The start of the arguments from the Solicitor General were met with tough questions, not just from the Chief Justice, but also Justice Gorsuch, Justice Barrett, you know, those that we tend to think are the swing justices. We already know where the three liberals are going to vote. They're going to vote against the administration. So the fact that there's three, I guess you could call them moderates or the GOP appointees that I think could end up on the liberal side tells me that it was President Trump's administration that had the harder day in court. I mean, at one point, I even have a quote, the Chief Justice said, he goes, the statute doesn't use the word tariffs, telling. Justice Jackson, who we all love all the time, to quote, she did actually go into the legislative history and noted that when Congress was creating the law the president is citing, they were really worried about more property interests and that the president should have ability to protect property interests from foreign governments, especially during a time of war, for example. And she said, you know, there was no evidence that when Congress was putting the statute together that they were thinking about tariffs. So all of this, you know, tells me there seems to be some agreement between the GOP wing of the court and the liberal wing that it could be the Trump administration loses this. I'm not sure they could come up with a ruling where they somehow split it up. I'm not sure if they're able to say, well, some of these tariffs constitute emergencies, some don't. We'll have to see.
Okay, Alex, and you can bat this right back at me if we don't have the answer to this yet, but I understand Trump, every time we turn on the news, he's flying over to some foreign country and signing a trade agreement here and a trade agreement there. If this doesn't go our way, which sounds like a possibility, does that put all those pieces of paper in the paper shredder? Does it blow all that? What does this do?
No, I don't think that it would destroy any sort of new trade deals that the president has been able to accomplish. And that was one thing the Solicitor General pointed out. He said that these tariffs that the president is imposing to regulate and retaliate, basically, are helping him renegotiate trade deals. And he kind of listed a few different countries off the bat. So no, I don't think they would go away, those trade deals that have been renegotiated. And I do think the administration has already been looking at, people smarter than me are looking at ways that they can go around this law and maybe come up with another way to support these tariffs the president has already done.
Okay. Let's shift gears away from this for a moment. Let's talk about Prop 50 in California. Obviously, it was big in California. It didn't get a ton of national interest. This was California gerrymandering out the last of their Republicans, essentially. Sounds like something that should land before the Supreme Court. Is it going to?
I think it could. I think you're right, and I would love to cover it. So basically, Proposition 50 was Gavin Newsom's push to redistrict California, and voters seem to have supported that and accepted that. I can get into the numbers why I think that is, but basically what it would do is it would force Republicans in Congress to lose about 4 to 5 seats. This was a push that Gavin Newsom was making after Texas moved to redistrict. It's kind of like a red state, blue state war, right? And one of the reasons I think this was successful was the amount of money that was poured into the effort, which, you know, is kind of how these things work with elections. I saw one article that the side advocating for this had about $120 million to support this proposition, while those against $44 million, you know, very much outspent, outworked. Now, you know, Newsom's claiming victory on this, and he's calling for other blue states, Virginia, Maryland, New York, Illinois, to do the same. So yeah, this wouldn't just have an impact for California with less Republican lawmakers representing them, but it would have an effect, you know, nationally with a shift of balance in Congress.
Okay, so red states, can we not match this? Is it not in our ability, or do we not have the will?
So that's something that's very interesting. Texas has tried to do that, right? And it's tied up in court right now. So when you asked about could California's situation end up at the Supreme Court, I think it's very likely that you have red states trying to do this, blue states trying to do this, lower courts rule how they will, and then it eventually works its way up to the justices. And so, you know, we'll hear from them exactly what can be done. I tend to think the court would say this is, you know, these people are elected, your state lawmakers are elected to do as, you know, they run on. So maybe this is a political question that they don't want to dive into, but we'll have to see.
Tell me about Jack Smith's report.
Okay, so the latest with Jack Smith's report out of the Southern District of Florida is basically Judge Eileen Cannon has been ordered by the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals to consider in the next 60 days motions to release Jack Smith's report related to his investigation of the classified documents being kept at Mar-a-Lago. Everyone, I'm sure, remembers that case was dismissed back when President Trump won the election in November. There's DOJ guidance that says, you know, not to prosecute a sitting president. So that's why Jack Smith petitioned the DOJ to get rid of the case, and they did. The one thing I note in my book, though, is that this was dismissed without prejudice, which means some of these charges could actually be resurrected. I think there's some statute of limitations in the charges that are like 8 years. So let's say, you know, a very, very aggressive Democratic administration comes in next. They could try to resurrect this case. That's one reason I don't think the report should be released publicly. But of course, there's First Amendment groups that are trying to claim that we have, as the public, have access to see Jack Smith's work.
James Comey, evidence is starting to be released.
Yes.
Tell me about this case. Is this something substantial? Did you read it and your eyes popped out of your skull?
Yeah, I wish I could read his handwriting a little better because I think that would be more helpful. He's kind of like scribbles a lot, but a couple of things that pop out to me. So he's trying to argue that the DOJ is coming after him in basically a political prosecution, a vindictive prosecution. So I think there's actually going to be a hearing on that later this month. I remember reporting on this, I think it was November 13th. That date sticks out to me. Don't quote me, but around then. Long story short, the U.S. attorney, so Lindsey Halligan, responded to the claim of a vindictive prosecution and basically included exhibits that show that Comey was working with his friend, that law professor Daniel Richman, about leaking to the media. And that's exactly what he's being charged for, right? He's being charged for lying to Congress saying that he wasn't part of leaking to the media when it looks like there's actually emails showing that he was, or he was at least in part doing so. Like, okay, for example, Exhibit 5 shows that he's talking to his law professor friend about media and says that his decision, so I don't know whatever that decision is, but quote, would be one President-elect Clinton would like. So what, you know, why is he making decisions thinking a President-elect Clinton would like it? The other thing, Exhibit 7 shows him praising his friend's media appearance. And then he also says in the email, quote, well done, my friend, who knew this would be oh so fun. And then lastly, there's another one that my friend Mike Davis shared, Exhibit 13. There's seems to be handwritten notes, which are kind of hard to, you can see them right there on the screen, hard to kind of zoom in on. But there's one line in there that says HRC plan for hit Trump. That's what I read. So why is he worried about Hillary Rodham Clinton's plan to hit Trump? It just seems extremely political. It does show he was in on, you know, his friend's media appearances, for whatever that might be. And in one of the emails, the friend actually offers, I think, to write an op-ed or do some sort of defense of Comey and the FBI. And it looks like Comey says, well, you know, not right now, but that at least shows that he's being, you know, asked. Maybe this was a practice. We'll have to wait and see more when this hearing happens. But, you know, it looks like this U.S. attorney definitely came armed with evidence.
Oh, so fun. Kind of a dude talks like that. That's how women talk. It's very weird. Anyway, thank you so much, Alex. I appreciate you. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And look, some kids are just cool. That certainly wasn't me. Some kids make you jealous about what a dork you were when you're a kid. Look at this stud on Halloween night. It's got to throw in reverse. What's the? I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.